Welcome to the Borderless Podcast, your guide to traveling, investing, and living beyond borders, where we talk about living the life that you want to live, where you want to live it.
All right, everybody. Welcome to another Borderless Podcast. You're here with James Guzman, your host, and today I'm joined by Brandon Pierce, and we're here in San Miguel de Allende. He just moved here, a year ago?
About a year ago.
And really incredible. He's doing lots of different stuff, and it's really hard to even, and not only that, you have a great background, very interesting. And so maybe, first of all, we could talk about, where you're from and maybe how you got into what you're doing today.
Sure. Yeah, I was born and raised pretty much in Salt Lake City, Utah. Mm. And my wife and I met there, had two kids, and through a huge series of events that kind of gradually led us to a point where we have been traveling the world for the past 9 years together, and now have three kids, and a whole bunch of stuff has happened, as you mentioned, but Salt Lake City, Utah is where we started.
Yeah, right, but you I think it's really amazing how you first got started as far as the location independent side of it. That's something that a lot of people... I talk about all different ways that, you know, people can accomplish that, because really that's the first thing, you know, is getting that money that or whatever you need to, in order for you to move around. And what you did was very interesting. It's, you know, it's not, you know, a lot of people do like Amazon stores or drop shipping or I don't know, something, or coders, but you actually designed a software that was very successful. So did you design software before that or?
No, I was... I was planning to become a computer programmer.
Yeah.
This is like in my early 20s. I was working at a call center just doing internet tech support, like dial-up tech support, making like pennies. But I was also teaching piano lessons on the weekends. It's kind of a side job because I love music as well. But I knew that like the career path that I wanted to go down was programming. That's all I had in mind. I didn't have any ideas about making a business or traveling. I mean, I wanted to travel, but I didn't know how. It wasn't really on my radar. There was a point at my job, so I was going to school in the evenings to study computer programming, and I was doing some coding during my work, at my job, doing homework. And I was good at the calls, I could take the calls, I knew how to answer a lot of the questions, like the back of my hand. But one day my boss came up to me and he said, you know, you can't be having your computer out while you're at work. And I thought, you know, this is kind of, like, this is what I want to be doing, is programming. I don't really want to be at this tech support job. So I had to make a decision. Am I going to put the laptop away and just twiddle my thumbs waiting for calls? Or am I going to do something else? So I decided to quit my job and take the first bold move to toward the career that I wanted to have. And at the same time, I had been working on a program just on the side. I was still fairly beginning, a beginning programmer, but a program to help me keep track of my piano students. So just to keep track of the billing and the scheduling. When the students would come to the lesson, they'd say, hey, Brandon, you know, how much do I owe you? And I'd have to, you know, pull out my records and calculate a bunch of stuff. And it took forever, and it was kind of a pain. So I thought I'd make a little system to help me keep track of how that worked, keep track of their payments when they were coming. And eventually, I got the idea through a friend of mine at college. He said, why don't you turn that into a business? Mm. And I thought, well, yeah, I mean, there are other music teachers out there who might benefit from some software like this. So I spent several months putting together the program and launching it in a way that other teachers could pay for it and use it as a subscription service. And I put it out there, and it took a long time, honestly, to get off the ground.
Oh, really?
It took years before it was making significant income. But I remember around this time, my wife's father lost his job at a computer company. He was doing, he was high up in the company. He didn't really do anything wrong. They were just downsizing. And I got struck with this sense of, you know, why am I going toward this degree in computer programming? Why am I trying to build a career for myself when I'm just working for somebody else who could fire me at any time? Mm. Just like I kind of quit my job here, or in a way almost got fired. I wanted financial security for my family. I wanted my family to be taken care of no matter what happened to me. And I thought, well, maybe this business, maybe this little software company that I'm making could turn into that.
Right.
So even though after the first year, I don't know, making a few hundred dollars here, maybe a few thousand after the first few years. It wasn't much, but I thought, you know, I'm seeing people are paying for it, people are liking it, so I'm going to keep putting energy and effort into this with the hope that it will one day turn into something. And yeah, after 4 or 5 years, it was making enough to where I felt I could quit my programming job, which I then had, and then eventually sell our house and everything and start traveling the world.
Yeah.
And running that now from everywhere, and it's also become kind of a business that I'm... It's a four-hour work week business. A lot of people say, you know, you can't do that four-hour work week thing. It's just a joke.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I literally do work less than 4 hours per week on this business.
On that business, yeah.
And it provides for my family.
But it did take a lot of work in the beginning.
It took a ton of work. Years and years and years of, like, 70-hour weeks trying to build it.
That's the thing with the four-hour work week is you got to front-load all the work.
Absolutely.
And hopefully it pays off. And, you know, with you it did. And, you know, you were persistent with it. And you got to be making pretty good. It sounded like a good, you know, good amount of money with that, right? I mean, just
it's
passively.
High six figures. As well.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's so good. And so it took like what 2 years, 3 years to get off the ground, really going.
I mean, I launched it in a matter of months, but it I think after 3 or 4 years, it was still only making like $1,500 a month.
Yeah,
$1,500 a month, which wasn't what I was making at my job. But I knew that I could supplement if I quit my job. I could take that money, put more effort into it to grow it faster, and I could supplement the income in the meantime with like freelance programming gigs and stuff like that.
Yeah, and so now that's gotten you to where you can, you know, you've been traveling and stuff, but now you're basically like, you know, hanging out here in San Miguel most of the time, right? I mean, you still travel.
Part of the year, yeah. I mean, we're doing a lot of travel still.
Yeah.
Because we have, I'm to the point now where the business is providing for a family. We don't need a ton of extra money from other things, but I mean, I've purchased some real estate properties. We're in a few places, so we're getting some income from that. But really, most of my time now is actually spent on passion projects.
Right.
So we do travel, but most of it now is for things like the Family Adventure Summit that we're doing, the retreats that we're running.
Yeah, you got so much stuff going on.
Tons of stuff going on.
Yeah.
it's kind of crazy. I've made my life busy again, but it's busy.
And a lot of cool stuff.
Like, but it's busy with stuff I love.
Yeah,
that's stuff that I feel is meaningful. So.
Yeah. And, you know, I definitely want to get into the summit that you're going to be doing here. I think it's very interesting. So I've had on Matthew Kind, you know, in the past, and he's big in the world schooling as well. And I think that maybe you don't use that. Do you use world schooling in term?
Not so much, because for us it's more about learning. So we call it, like, interest-led learning.
Interest-led
or self-directed learning.
Is that kind of, it's kind of like unschooling, or?
Like unschooling, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we give our kids the freedom to pursue the things that they're passionate about and that they're really interested in, and we facilitate by providing resources and some direction around that.
Because there's a lot of people that email me about how would they be an expat, or how would they do the location independent thing, travel with a family, and you actually have at least one website with that specifically helps people with that, right?
Yeah, we have our family blog, pierceonearth.com, where we write a lot about the educational aspects of travel.
And it looked like you had something where you coach people or something, or you can
I've done coaching in the past,
right.
My wife is currently doing more of the coaching at the moment. High performance
so
coaching.
I asked Matthew Kind, and this is one thing that always I like to know about. So was your wife already on board with this, or did she want to pick up from Salt Lake City? Was she ready to move, or did you have to convince her of that?
Actually, she was probably more the instigator of it than I was. We were both interested in it. We both wanted to do it, and it just made sense. I mean, I had this business here that we could do from anywhere, so it's like, why are we sitting here in Salt Lake City?
Yeah.
Especially when we just look ahead at the trajectory of our lives, and we're seeing, well, we might get a bigger house and a nicer car, but so what? We wanted more meaning and more adventure and more learning and more growth, personal growth in our lives. We were feeling like we were stagnating. Mm-hmm. So we both felt that, but I was still resistant from a logistical standpoint. I mean, thinking selling our house and all our stuff and then having to figure out the mail and so much to think about. So it kind of, it took me a while to warm up to the ideas. I was trying to figure out all the logistical stuff. We were pretty much on board together.
Right. Okay, that's great. Yeah, I mean, that's one big thing. You know, I've had friends that have a spouse that's not on board, and it's really tough. But I mean, I guess there's some negotiating that you can do. But most people that do it, they already have. You know, Matthew was saying his wife was the same way and stuff. So that's cool. And so you enjoy here. And so I couldn't believe when I looked at your blog and you got a picture there. You're hanging out in San Miguel. And I was like, wow. You know, I had no idea. You got some some big websites and stuff. And you have a this summit. What is it? October?
Yep.
400 people or something like that?
Yeah, it's called the Family Adventure Summit, and we are expecting around 400 people to come. We already have just under 300 registered, and we still got like 9 months to go or something like that. So I think we'll probably sell out, but I'm so excited for this because it's just... And I'm working so hard to put on an really epic event.
Yeah.
It's for families interested in convening around the topics of long-term travel, location independence, alternative education, entrepreneurship, community building, relationships, everything that goes into living a long-term travel lifestyle. And we're bringing in speakers who have been traveling for decades and or who are big entrepreneurs or a whole bunch of different expertise,
right,
as well as just the community itself who's coming in to share their own wisdom and knowledge.
Yeah. I had no idea that it was that you had this. I guess it's like some sort of a world schooling hub here. Would you say that?
Yeah, I would.
I mean, had no
idea. It's continued to grow. When we first came in 2015, there were a couple families here, but I think word has gotten around that it's just an awesome place, and so we love it as a home base because there's so much for the kids. There's a lot of classes. Our kids are in oil painting and horseback riding and a drama class and a circus skills class. And
right. Let's talk about that. So, you know, I've always thought about, I mean, I don't have any kids, right? But I thought that, you know, if I did, I would do something like that. And I always thought San Miguel was a cool place for that because there's, I don't know, lots of different people and tutors, and especially if they're into art because, I mean, there's so much art here and stuff like that. So how does it go about doing that? You tell me. What is it actually? Is it structured at all, or how do you go about with teaching them these different skills?
Yeah, and again, it really depends on, well, I guess what's available as well as their interests. So our daughters love art. My oldest, she's 14, and she is really into singing and songwriting, animation, art. In fact, before we came to San Miguel, she was taking singing and songwriting lessons from a professional songwriter who lived in L.A. She was doing that via Skype. So in some ways, it doesn't matter the location that we're in when they can do online classes.
Right.
But now that she's here and they have fantastic like oil painting teachers and some of the other stuff she wants to do, drama classes, she's just really eager to take advantage of those types of things. All of our kids are in that regard.
What about other stuff? You know, math and reading retention. Like, how do you do that? Is it like homeschooling or what?
No? So, well, we do read as a family.
Right. That's great.
At night, we read we're reading Anne Frank, the Diary of a Young Girl, and now we're reading Story of the World, Volume 3. We've done the first two volumes already, just to give a good overview of history.
Right.
Great little books. But for math, yeah, we don't really like do any math, but our kids do.
Okay.
Like, for example, Emily, she's really interested in going to art school. She knows she'll need to learn some math for it, so she's been, you know, studying it. She goes to Khan Academy, or she'll search up things online and find different websites that'll teach her the different skills she needs. Right now, she's learning some pre-algebra and some geometry and different things. We don't push it at all. We don't have discussions about homework. If they have questions about things, they'll come and talk to us and we'll help them through it. I love working on spreadsheets, so you know, I've shown her how to read a financial statement, how to create her own, because she's actually employed now as well. Our 14-year-old, she's got a job doing video editing for a kid's blog.
Cool.
Popular vlog.
Great.
Just helping her figure out the finances of that and knowing how to track it. So I don't know, I feel like our kids are learning the skills that they need that are relevant to them. But most importantly, they're learning how to learn. And when they know how to learn, how to find the information that they need, it doesn't matter where they go, what they do in life, or what they want to do in life, they'll be able to get the information that they need.
Yeah. And so how many people would you say are here semi-full-time are doing that? I mean, do you have, like, meetups? Or I mean, you have to give me an exact amount, but I mean, is there a good amount of people here that they can...
Dozens of families.
Really?
Yeah, I would say dozens of families. Well, it's when you say semi-permanently, I mean, most of the families we know who come here, like in the long-term family travel circles, travel is still very important to them. So
right.
So they stay for maybe 3 months or 6 months or a year, right. whatever they feel like on their visa, and depending on their financial situation, whatever else they want to do. But yeah, there are dozens of families here. Yesterday we went with, I think, four other families to Casa de Aves, just like 20 minutes out of town, this beautiful open space with swings and a trampoline and a zip line and kayaks and everything, and just hung out for the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's really cool, man. And it's just interesting. I'm just watching like how things develop. As far as you have different areas that people just kind of conjugate to, and where this is gonna go. You know, people have like digital nomad types or whatever you want to say. They have different home bases or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and this is definitely one of mine as well.
Yeah.
Are there any others that you can say that you have a home base right now, or is this your main one?
Yeah, we home based for 3 or 4 years in Bali, Ubud.
A lot of people go there.
Yeah, we love Bali.
It's
a huge entrepreneurial hub and a lot of great
very inexpensive,
homeschooling
huh?
communities there, very inexpensive. And if you're looking for an international school, they've got some cool ones there, like Green School and different places. But yeah, I mean, this is a movement, I think, right now. When we started 9 years ago, we thought we were the only family out there traveling long-term. And there were a handful of others, but the years, it's just exploded. And
well,
there are thousands of families out there right now traveling the world like this.
Americans or?
People from all over.
All over.
Yeah. I mean, mostly U.S., Canada, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, but...
Ka Sundance, I had him on the podcast.
Yeah, he's speaking at our summit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in fact, we're co-leading an all-day workshop together at the summit on how to create an online business.
Yeah, because he had... He said there are tons of German, German people doing that.
Yeah, there are.
And so, wow, that's interesting. So, what would you say is the difference? Maybe people are considering, maybe Latin America could be San Miguel or something like that, or Bali. What would you say is the difference, or should people consider?
Well, if you're from the U.S. or Canada. Of course, San Miguel is closer and cheaper to get to. The visa is the big advantage.
Now, though.
You can stay here for 6 months and just pop out of the border and come right back,
and then
you can stay for another 6 months.
Yeah, nobody cares.
In Bali, it's much more complicated. You can arrive, stay free for 30 days, and then you have to leave. Or if you want to stay for more than 30 days, you can pay like $25 a passport to stay for 30 days, and then you have to pay another $40 to $60 a passport, depending on how you do it. To stay for another 30 days, and then you have to leave. So 2 months is really your max, unless you apply for a visa in advance, and even then it's single entry and you have to renew every month. And so it's a lot more complicated, a lot more expensive to stay in Bali longer term.
Yeah.
And the other, I guess...
Well, that's interesting, because everybody thinks it's really cheap.
Yeah, well, it is cheap in most regards, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the food is amazing. It's like the best food hub I've ever seen for a small city. You can find anything there. You know, $2 to $4 a plate for just amazing organic, healthy, or vegan, or whatever you want to eat kind of food. And you can hire household help super cheap there too. Like
right.
we at our villa there, we have a full-time cook who's there. She's and we pay her just under $200 a month,
right.
which is a fantastic salary there.
Right. And so you have a place there still.
We do have a place
and
there.
What,
yeah.
You like rent it out or something when you're not there? Or?
Yeah, you can't actually buy property in Bali as a foreigner.
You cannot. Okay.
So we have a long-term lease on a property. It's a funny story. We were at a point where we just wanted to find a place to kind of settle for a little while, to put our stuff down. And we weren't finding the kind of places in Bali that we wanted to rent at a reasonable price. They were like, they're kind of expensive, over $2,500, $3,000 a month for a 3 or 4 bedroom house that was, you know, set up the way we wanted. I really want my own office and that kind of thing. So we were getting picky, I guess.
Yeah.
But
you need an office.
I mean, I do. When I want to work on my project.
Yeah.
So we found this place. It's like, three bedrooms. It was two separate houses, but right next to each other, like on the same lot. And it was three bedrooms with a small pool, beautiful view over this jungle. And the price was $5,000 a year to rent that. Unfurnished.
Wow. Yeah.
And we thought, well, we'll just get it. We'll put a few pieces of furniture in there. We'll fix it up a little because it had some issues. But as we started fixing it up, we just kind of got carried away.
Mm.
And then we met this interior designer and an architect, both from Belgium. And they inspired us with a whole bunch of ideas. and we ended up turning it into this gorgeous luxury villa
yeah.
that we now rent out on Airbnb for around $5,000 a month.
Right. Nice. So, and but how do you manage that remotely?
We have staff there. So we have... Okay. Because we don't own it, obviously there's a landlord yeah. who actually owns the land, and he helps take care of it. We also have a full-time cook, housekeeper, and driver that help manage the property. And I just communicate with them on Facebook.
Right. And you, so you like, do you do anything as far as the management of that?
Not the on-the-ground management. I mean, there's the communicating with the guests through
yeah,
Airbnb, but I actually have an assistant who helps me with that, too. So
like a co-host, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
and so. Do you just use Airbnb, or...?
For that property, yes. We started doing Home Away with this one, although the first experience wasn't so good, so I'm not sure what we'll continue with it or not.
It's, you know, I work with a lot of these different types of, so I'm just, you know, mm-hmm. interested in how that... I mean, Airbnb seems to be working great for a lot of people. And, you know, that's I like that strategy. That's pretty much what I'm trying to do, too, is, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, you have a place in different bases that you have, and then, you know, when you're there, you got your place, and then when not, you can... you know, rent it out, and you can make some money, and yeah. it's just it's a great opportunity to be able to do.
I also really appreciate after living in other people's spaces for 9 years, it feels really good to be here in a place where we've kind of chosen some of our own furniture and right. our art, and we know like the layout is one that we chose.
Yeah,
you know, so it's and in Bali, especially because we basically built it, we kind of gutted the house oh. and really renovated it to our yeah. needs. So. It's hard to find places like that when you're traveling. If you want to be picky about where you're staying, and a lot of times we haven't been picky, and we stay hostels sometimes, and we stay on people's floors and whatnot,
right.
and it's fine for a while. But when we really want to settle in and work on our stuff, then right. it's helpful to have a good space.
And you know, a lot of people are interested in you know real estate, buying real estate. You know, obviously because I'm in Mexico most of the time, people ask me about Mexico, and they have a lot of misconceptions about. Buying property here, and mm-hmm. people think that you can't buy property here, mm-hmm. and people think that you need to have a... there's a lot of people that say something really strange, like you have to do a 100-year lease or something. I don't know where this came from. I've heard a lot of people say... Anyways, how was your experience buying property here in Mexico?
Extremely easy, like easier than in the States.
Were you on a tourist visa?
We were on a tourist visa.
Yeah, so you didn't...
No, we just came in on a tourist visa. We weren't even sure we wanted to buy here. We just were checking it out to... see again. This is our second or third time. Last January, I think it was. And we, after a while, we're like, you know what? I think we really do want to consider this place. So let's look at some properties. Contacted a realtor and started checking some out. And 2 or 3 days before we were scheduled to leave, there's a property online that I saw them. I said, we got to look at this one. I told the realtor about it. He showed it to us. And we're like, yeah, this is it. Let's do it. And so we signed all the paperwork like at the last minute to give him the ability to take care of everything while we were gone. And we did. He handled everything remotely for us while we were traveling.
Right.
So it was simple.
Yeah, it's funny because you know, some of the videos that I've done about real estate and stuff like that in Mexico, I get a lot of people asking, "Well, how do you do it? How do I get?" And pretty much, I mean, I have a Clarity account, mm-hmm. so if people want to, you know about this stuff, then they can, you know, pay me and sign up, and you know, I can give them advice.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I just tell them, you know, call any real estate office. I mean, you got
totally, exactly.
Coldwell Banker, you got Century. Well, now you don't have Century 21 here anymore, but you know, Keller Williams and all the people that you know, you just give them a call. I mean, it's pretty much the same as the U.S. except for. The mortgage aspect of it.
Yeah, you can't get a mortgage here very easily.
Right.
Unless you're resident or you want to get super high interest rates.
Super high interest rates and very, a lot down, big down payments.
Yeah.
So it's like not kind of the crazy low interest like that you get in the States. I mean,
no.
There's pretty much nowhere else that you can do that. A lot of Americans don't realize that.
Yeah, it's a benefit.
So, well, that's, and so what else? You have the summit mm-hmm. coming up. You, have this piano,
my music teacher's helper. It's called Music Teacher's Helper.
Okay.
That's my SaaS business. We also have another product called Studio Helper,
okay.
which isn't for independent, the Music Teacher's Helper is for independent music teachers. Studio Helper is for larger studios and schools with multiple teachers.
Okay.
And not just music. It could be yoga or dance or whatever.
Right. And because I noticed, I mean, you have like 7 things on your signature, so it's like, so, yeah, and you also have the one that people, with their one up. Travel with their family, right?
Yeah, it's the Family Travel Accelerator. So it's a monthly live training that I do each month where I just teach about various aspects of the kind of questions people have around traveling right. long-term with your family. And then there's live Q&A at the end. People yeah. can ask questions.
So, that, I mean, that's... you. It's just so interesting that, like, so before, I think, you know, before, another thing is that, you know, before you were a Mormon, right?
Yeah, yeah. right.
So it was mm-hmm. like, that was a whole nother, you know, you're,
lifetime
so you were,
ago.
You're, yeah, you were a developer for a company, you were more, and then kind of that change, and now it's just like flowered into this thing, you know, where you're just living where you want to and do have all these passion projects, you know, I mean, how, I, first of all, I mean, how does it feel now? It's got to be weird, like, the difference, you know?
It's it's a completely different life. Like,
right.
I feel like I've been living two lives or more.
Mm.
So, I mean, it has been somewhat of a gradual process. 6 months into our just to explain the Mormon thing, 6 months into our travel adventure, I was serving in a church leadership position in Costa Rica, even, and we were still very active in it. But something I started to wake up to the fact that the way that I had been interpreting my spiritual experiences and my beliefs about reality and everything was not necessarily the only valid interpretation.
Right.
And that there were other views and other things that were also valid that I could understand. And I guess my mind just started to open up to the idea that my way isn't, like, I always thought my way is the right way and everyone else is wrong and they're going to be miserable unless they do it my way. That was kind of the perspective that I grew up with. And now, like, just even with that shift alone, just realizing that there are so many amazing people out here in the world, and they each have their own views, they each have their own stories, their own histories, and their own reasons for believing what they do. And just being acknowledgement and respect to that has been a huge change and a huge shift in
right.
my life. And then beyond that, coming to now a place where I am able to fill the majority of my time with projects that I'm passionate about. Like, I really love this, just inspiring families to tune into what they want to create in their lives, not being stuck in the cultural or religious bubbles that they have been raised in for whatever reason. But I mean, if they're happy there and they love it, fine. But I mean, if that's not what you want, like, I love seeing families tune into what they want and then have the courage to go out and create it.
Right.
And so that's what all these projects that I'm doing now are about. They're just helping families understand, first of all, that yes, there are now thousands of families out there traveling the world, and that it's not, you know, just like an extended vacation. It's like living in other places, and there are challenges, and there are transformations, and there are a whole bunch of different things that come with that, but that it's also possible for anyone to do. There are families doing this on every budget level.
Right.
We've done surveys at Family Adventure Summit, people traveling around the world on less than $1,000 a month, you know, upwards of $10,000 a month. And the whole range, the family that we're doing the retreat with
yeah.
in Europe this summer, they have two teenagers, and they've been traveling for the past 6 years to 40 different countries on a budget of $25,000 a year.
Wow.
40 countries.
With
two kids. And it just, like...
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, when you learn the ways to travel affordably and how to do it and still make it an incredibly meaningful and transformational experience.
Right.
I think a lot of people's eyes open up and they're like, wow, maybe I can do this too. And then I hope it gets them out the door.
So, I mean, that sounds like, you know, there was a specific, you know, what you might call like a waking up moment or something like that. Like when, you know, I don't know, something that...
Yeah.
That you started questioning, and then all of a sudden it took you down the path, right? I mean, and I'm sure that the people around you at the time weren't like, I mean, how did they react to that, to this whole thing?
Yeah, well, there's a few different shifts in the story, right?
Yeah.
So first we have, I'm quitting my job to become an entrepreneur.
Right.
Right? And then we have, I'm leaving the country to go travel the world. And then it's, I'm leaving my religion and my heritage in a way.
Mm.
To explore a more broad global mindset.
Oh.
So, yeah, each of those phases was met with a certain type of resistance from people that we knew, friends and family. Sometimes it was just, are you sure this is the right decision? You know, is this really going to be good for your kids? When we went to travel, we had people say, "You're crazy. You're gonna, you know, they're gonna get kidnapped, and you gotta get GPSs for them and stuff like that, because and attach them, glue them to their wrists because you don't want them to get lost." And then when we left the Mormon Church, it was, It's like committing social suicide in some ways.
Your whole family was part of that?
All our family are Mormon, except for my mom. She actually left the church about 10 years before us, so she was a really good support to us during that time. And there were a lot of family and friends who were more understanding than others, but we've had people, especially on my wife's side of the family, who've like, we said, we don't want to talk to you anymore.
Right.
Basically, we're done with this relationship.
Yeah.
I posted a 30-page document on my blog about why we left the church, our whole reason and journey and story out of it. And, you know, we had a huge range of responses. Everything from, you know, you're a child of Satan and you're going to regret this at the judgment day,
apostate,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yes. You're a sinful apostate. To, wow, you have some interesting perspectives there. I can see you've researched this a lot. I don't agree with you, but, you know, fine. To other people thinking like, wow, you know, this is something I've struggled with so much. Thank you for helping, you know, clarify all this for me. And others who said, like, I've been through this journey. It feels so good to have, to know I'm not alone in this. And other people who are, like, struggling in their relationships with their spouse, like, they're still going to church or whatever, but they don't believe. And just, there's a lot of incongruence there, I think. And it's been revealing for me when I posted that to just realize that, I mean, it's the same story coming from me, you know, but the reaction is really saying it's about the other people. So because of the range, it's not like before I would take things personally when someone criticized me.
Right.
But now I realize it's not about me. It's about them. And
sure.
Everyone has their own views and their own way. This is another thing that kind of revealed that to me, that, everyone will come to it with their own interpretation and their own story. And that's fine. It's what they're feeling. And some people may want to distance themselves from us, and it was hard. It was really, especially for my wife, but also for me, just facing the social ostracism and the judgment that we received when we announced that we were leaving the church was really huge. But because of that, it's freed us up to create new community with people who really get us and really resonate with us on a deeper level than just what we believe about, you know, where we came from and where we're going after we die.
Right. Yeah. Wow. And so, I mean, it's probably a little less drastic than, I don't know, maybe not. But, you know, he was Jonathan Lockwood was the co-host. I used to do this podcast with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a similar thing when he was, you know, Jehovah's Witness. And we did a whole podcast on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's a little less drastic than that, probably.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. They're very similar. Those two
religions
are very similar. They both do proselytizing. In fact, the J-Dub showed up at my door yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's American Jehovah's Witnesses here.
I see the Mormon missionaries all the time, too.
Yeah.
But, I was a missionary in Japan. So I'm familiar with how that feels, and you know, I like to still be kind to the missionaries, but I think, like, if you're talking about Scientology or something, I think that's a little bit more drastic.
Oh, right.
But I think the J-Dubs and the Mormons are fairly similar in the family reaction to apostatism.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, once that old kind of your sports system or something like that, you didn't really have that anymore. It's kind of, I think a lot of people, you know, when they're just kind of out there alone now and, you know, having trouble with motivation and not, you know, how did you get direction into, you know, starting all these businesses and finding all these stuff like that? Like what was it that helped you with that?
Well, first I have to say that, I mean, leaving the church was at the time, the hardest thing, probably still to this day,
really?
The hardest thing that I have ever done.
Mm.
I mean, I came to it with this knowledge that I knew the answers to life's big questions. I knew where I came from. I knew I was here on earth. I knew where I'm going. I knew who God was. I knew who I was. I knew everything.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, the rug is pulled out from under me.
Yeah.
I fall flat on my face, and I realize I know absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And I have to figure out life.
Right.
So it became an opportunity to look at everything with a blank slate and to try to be as non-judgmental as I can. Until I get, you know, more information to be able to make a good judgment. So it took years, honestly, of kind of stumbling through and trying to figure out who I was and what I believed and what I wanted. I had my experience to go on, which is good, but my experience is very limited outside of the church.
Right.
So, we explored a lot of different things, and, you know, traveling has really helped because we get exposed to so many different ideas and so many different people.
Right, yeah.
And But yeah, it
that keeps you energized and knowing that, you know, you're going to see new things, you know, new exciting places and stuff like that.
It does, yeah. And it also keeps me out of a rut. And
right.
I think this is
a
similar reason to why we began traveling in the first place, because we felt like we were in a rut. We were doing the same things every day with the same people in the same places. And over time, when I do that, I you kind of get used to it. Mm. And it just kind of sits in, and it's like, well, I'm not in a rut. It just feels normal. But then when we travel, whether because we're forced to because of a visa situation running out or whatever, and we're just, oh, wow, yeah, this is, we're alive again. We get a chance to shake up our routine a little bit, to shake up our perspective. We feel the different energies of a place.
Yeah.
And we get a chance to reinvent ourselves in every place we go.
Yeah.
So that process of reinventing ourselves, I think it's just, travel is a powerful catalyst for growth because of that.
Yeah. I think a lot of people have trouble, you know, finding the motivation in order to start things like that, in order to persist, you know, because it took a couple years to get that off the road, get going, and just to start a blog and to keep at it, you know, a lot of people have trouble with just doing that, you know, and so.
Yeah. Well, there are a few things I want to say to that as well. Yeah. One is, I mean, we started the travel blog before, like right when we began traveling, to kind of keep family and friends informed. But these other projects, like, I was at a point when we were in Bali, I mean, I had this 4-hour work week business, and, you know, I didn't have to really do much besides travel with my family. There wasn't really any obligations, and I spent a lot of time just navel-gazing and writing and introspecting and everything. But there came a point where I realized, like, I want to do more to give. I want to create something again. I want to have more meaning than just, like, my own self-interest.
Yeah.
So that's when the ideas for Family Adventure Summit, the At Home in the World retreats, my Dream Achievement Blueprint program, my Family Travel Accelerator, all these other projects started coming to fruition as a way for me to serve and to give.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I think that it's interesting the, you know, what you were saying about maybe you didn't have all the answers. A lot of people describe it. I know that I had that, you know, a moment in my life that is the same thing, you know, when it could be one thing that, you know, a big thing like for you was, maybe it was before that. Maybe it was entrepreneurship that led down that path to start questioning. I'm not sure. But there comes a point, I know I had it, where all of a sudden, like, I felt like a moron. Oh my God, like, I have a lot of catching up to. I got to learn a lot. I thought that I knew a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I didn't. And so all of a sudden I'm like, wow,
yeah.
I got all of the knowledge of the history of the world now, and it's right at, you know, our fingertips. And it's just kind of an interesting phenomenon. I don't know what that is, some type of psychological thing that all of a sudden, wow, I don't know anything about anything.
Like, yeah. It's waking up, really.
Right?
It's like,
What, I don't know. Yeah. If somebody has studied that, like, psychologically or something, what this is about?
I think a lot of people experience that in different ways. And you don't have to even necessarily travel to experience that, but I think it's a huge catalyst for a lot of people to experience that. You know, maybe psychedelics would be for someone else, or just some other experience that maybe a death in the family or something.
Right.
You know, but yeah, it'd be interesting to read a study or something.
Yeah, someone should, because it's just an interesting phenomenon. So what would you say, like, if somebody, you know, is in a position that, you know, they want to start to do, you know, their own thing, they want to start their own business or get some type of location independent income. What do you think, you know, to get started? What would they need to do?
Yeah, if income is what you're looking for, well, it also depends. Like, if your goal is to, for example, to travel the world with your family, you don't necessarily need a business to do that.
Mm.
In fact, the majority of families, from our research, who are traveling the world long-term are doing it just as remote workers. They have a job with a regular company, but they're allowed to work remote.
Right.
So that's, I mean, first I would say if you're cool with that, then, you know, contact your employer, see if they're willing to let you do that, or find a job that does.
Mm.
There's also freelance gigs, and you can go to Upwork or Freelancer.com and find those types of gigs there to do.
Do people actually make a full-time living doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I employ several who do.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, everyone who's in our company, of course, works online. It's a remote company. Many of them are full-time. And it's, I mean, you the the hang up I hear with a lot of people with sites like Upwork is that, well, but you're competing with these guys from India who make $2 or $3 an hour, and how why would anyone want to hire me at 30 or 50 or 100? But it's about the quality, and it's about the experience, and it's about the communication. I mean, I've paid everywhere from $2 an hour to $150 an hour on Upwork. And I'm currently paying someone very high rates on Upwork because it's worth it to me for the experience that he brings.
But don't they take 25% or something like
that? Upwork does take a lot, they take a huge amount. And so, yeah, honestly, as much as I can, I'm hiring people out off of Upwork, hopefully not finding them through there. Because if you hire them through Upwork, you're supposed to legally keep them there for a couple of years or something before you get off the system.
Right.
But
it seems to me like that would be the future of work. I mean, that's so great. I've never, to be honest with you, I've never used it. I've never, I've been on there, I've tried to, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. It just hasn't worked for me. I haven't tried that enough, I think. But I think that that's a really good idea to have these, marketplaces where, people can offer their skills and, rather than a resume or something, I mean, you see, look, this is something that they've actually done. This is something that they've actually done. And then, how Upwork has this thing where it monitors how the hours that they're working, takes like screenshots. That's cool. I mean,
cool.
But I think that the amount is too much. I wish that they would bring that down.
Well, there are other systems coming in, and I think it'll continue to expand. The gig economy is here to stay, and it's growing. And I don't think Upwork's going to be the only player. And I mean, even some cryptocurrency type companies are getting into that space. I don't remember the names, but it's interesting to see what's coming with some of those technologies.
Right.
If someone wants to create a business, it's totally different scenario.
So, it's like I was saying, they have to get, what about not just the money aspect of it, but, if they're thinking about going somewhere else, say, I get a lot of people lately that want to leave California, for instance. if they were thinking, I want to go, I don't know where, or I don't know what, how did you start your, research? You just went, or what?
As far as deciding where to go?
Yeah.
Yeah, a number of ways you can do that. I mean, first, I think it should just be where, if you have a desire inside yourself, I've always wanted to go to Costa Rica, or to India, or whatever, then, just do that. You know what I mean? If that's calling to you.
Right.
But otherwise, look at finances, you can go to expat websites and talk to people who live there who are foreigners to get their perspective on it. You can look at visas. You can look at cost of living sites like NomadList or Numbeo.com, things like that. For us, it was... we grew up in Utah, so it's a desert, and we were so tired of the desert and the heat in the summer and the bitter cold in the winter with the inversion of the pollution that was just trapped inside the mountain valley. So... we were like, we want tropical, we want jungle, we want humid. So actually, before we moved and sold everything, we decided to take a 6-week trip to Panama to just kind of test the waters of living abroad, of being together 24/7 as a family, to see how that affected us. And I think that's a great way for anyone who's considering doing this to start out, because it's a small step in the direction. You can see how it feels. For us, it was absolutely... amazing. We bonded more together as a family than we ever had.
Right.
And we just felt so connected to ourselves, connected to the world. I mean, it's just one country, but I remember, times we were just walking, this time we were walking down the sidewalk, and our daughters paused to look, there's a caterpillar. And we all got down and we looked at the caterpillar, and it was so cool. But I just remember, I feel like that never would have happened back in Utah. And I know other families are probably more present than we were at the time, but for us, we realized the phrase to stop and smell the roses was something we weren't doing in our lives, and it's something we wanted to incorporate more into our lives, and that this environment was really helping with that. So we decided after we came back from that, we're gonna sell everything and we're gonna move to Costa Rica. And Costa Rica we chose because, again, it's tropical, similar to Panama. We knew we'd like it. My wife spoke Spanish, which was helpful. And we could get free airfare there.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Because my stepmom worked for JetBlue at the time, and so we were able to fly for free.
But it's just incredible. I guess there's a psychological thing to it. I my whole life have kind of moved around a lot and things, so I was kind of used to, I have never, I don't think I had like a hometown or, you know, something. Mm-hmm. I have. I mean, I grew up mostly in Charlotte, but, you know, I moved there when I was, I don't know, 7 or something. Mm-hmm. And then I moved away and then I came back. And I don't know. But there is a psychological thing a lot of people have, and I understand that. But once you get past that, it's just so incredible how much you can improve your standard of living and things that you're talking about. Yeah. That, I mean, with the, you know, the business that you're making, that you have, or all the businesses, you know, that, first of all, you know, that's, you're making a lot more than you would at a job, you know, creating passive income. Also, I mean, if you want to, you know, you can structure it in a way where you'd be paying less taxes than you would as just a regular worker. Yeah. And, you know, you live in a place with low cost of living. You can save money on health insurance and all this. I mean, it's just, and then at the same time, you know, your quality of life, as far as, you know, like you're saying, you could spend time with your kids. You get to work from home, so you don't have the horrible commute. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's, you
know,
incredible.
It's like a no-brainer if you can try to do it, you know, any of that, those aspects and apply that.
Yeah.
It really is great, you know. My last job was in the Navy more than 10 years ago.
Mm.
That was the last time and I just can't even picture myself doing anything like the going. I don't think... It's just, I don't know. Anyways, it's just
isn't
really
it great how we grow and change? And
right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's great, all the you know, the new technologies that are allowing us to be able to do this type of thing, and all the new hubs that are growing up. And it's always cool to, you know, run into people like you and just have, I didn't even know about this summit and all this mm-hmm. type of stuff. Before we wrap up, maybe, you know, since, you know, I'm in San Miguel, you've bought a house here, mm-hmm. You've traveled a lot. Maybe talk a little bit about, you know, the city. You know, so what? When did you first come here? A couple of years ago?
2015. Or Day of the Dead.
Yeah. Oh, the Day of the Dead. Yeah. That's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah. And so...
And that's also going to be when we're holding the summit this year, is over Day of the Dead.
So, oh, okay. Yeah. Dia de los Muertos.
Yes.
And so what is it about San Miguel? Why did you like it? Why did you decide to buy a house here?
You know, this goes back to the question of how do you decide where to travel? And I think it's different when you're looking for a place you want to go for a couple weeks versus a place you want to spend significant time.
Mm.
And for us, the main criteria were an amazing community. So we could have classes for our kids, friends that we could really connect with, and, you know, low cost of living and easy visa and all those other situations. Nature was also important.
Yeah.
However, this did not score very high for us in that regard. And that's the one thing that I mean, it's not the jungle. It's not Costa Rica. Costa Rica is like my ideal climate, or Bali. Mm. But neither of them had quite the same community as this. And that's what we were really missing.
It's kind of an arid desert here.
It's kind of arid desert. I mean, we have trees and plants. We have this
non-arid desert, I guess. It's not like the Sahara or something.
No. It's like a high desert.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got... lime and lemon and grapefruit and plum and a few other trees here on our roof, which is cool. But, you know, you can go to the park and there's a playground there and there's beautiful trees there. You can go out to Casa de Aves. But beyond that, you know, it's not lush, in other words. Beautiful flowers, you know, throughout the year in different colors. And, you know, they got the jacarandas that bloom coming up here soon and everything. But, yeah, for us, it was mostly the community that drew us here that made us want to stay. And also, we knew we would be going back and forth to the States a little bit more lately. We were visiting a lot of conferences last year, speaking at a few, and our family is closer this way, easier to travel to see them than it is from Bali.
Yeah.
And the one thing also that we love here is the culture, and I don't just mean Mexican culture. I love the Mexican culture here. It's so fun and rich and vibrant, and the colors and everything are so beautiful here. But even just the Western arts. In Bali, that's one thing we found we missed there, because you can experience incredible Balinese arts and culture and dances and everything, but it's really hard to find anything like a symphony or an opera or anything, any of the Western arts, which is something. And it's a small city like San Miguel, maybe 120,000 people here, but so it's hard to find that kind of stuff in any small city in the world, but here they bring in just some amazing performers, amazing different opportunities for that, if that's what you're into.
Sure.
All right. So if people want to come down and check out your conference here, how do they go about it? What do they need to look at, webpage or?
Yeah, if you go to familyadventuresummit.com, you can read all about the... you can see some videos from last year, which I highly recommend you check out. Mm-hmm. A little bit about San Miguel, what we're doing this year. And one thing we haven't talked about yet is that it's not just come and learn how to do this and, you know, learn about the education and the entrepreneurship and the travel aspect. That's very well covered. But it's also got... we also have an epic kids program with... Mm-hmm. Last year we had like 40 different activities for the kids to choose from. They went rock climbing, they had guitar lessons, we have an art room that's set up all day for anyone to go into and be able to do painting and different things. And we're bringing in a lot of aspects of Mexican culture. So in addition to the education and the learning for the adults, there's also that going on for the kids, and then of course just the networking with incredible, inspiring people who are intent on living with purpose and adventure in their lives. And it's so inspiring for me too, just to be surrounded by these people.
Awesome, man. Congratulations. That sounds great. And so it sounds like everything else, pretty much, you can just go to your blog, right?
If you go to pearceonearth.com, it's P-E-A-R-C-E onearth.com, you can see, you know, list of all the projects we've got going on, and also read about some of our travel adventures and different educational philosophies and whatever else you're interested in.
For sure, I'll definitely put a link to all that in the show notes, and thank you for coming on the Borderless Podcast. I appreciate it. It's been great meeting you and hanging out.
It's been such a pleasure, James. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Back there.
Thanks for joining us for the Borderless Podcast, traveling, investing, and living beyond borders.